जय माँ। सो वी हैव अ स्मॉल स्टोरी फ्रॉम द भागवत पुराण विच अश्वरबिंदो हैज सेड इज ए प्रोफाउंडली ऑकल्ट स्क्रिप्चर एंड दो आई हैव रेड इट अर्लियर एज ए चाइल्ड ग्रोइंग अप इन ए टिपिकल ट्रेडिशनल हिंदू फैमिली बट नाउ व्हेन आई एम री रीडिंग इट I find it even more engaging and fascinating. Of course, everything that is there has been in one way or the other now. Mother and Shurbinda have revealed to us in great depths. But still, it's beautiful to look at how our ancestors, forefathers, I shouldn't call them ancestors, saw the world and how they understood it. And how we continue that whole line, how it has evolved over a period of time. It's very fascinating. So today's story is again, we are on Canto 5 or Canto 6, Canto 6. And in this there is a story of one of the early stories of creation. Not creation, not the origin of creation. But as we know that according to Indian thought, I don't like to use the word mythology, though we can use the word mythology in the profoundest sense. Well, mythology is not about something which is untrue. That's the meaning that has been given. Mythology is simply stating a truth through symbol, images and figures. Because they are truths which are sometimes beyond the ken of human experience and human intelligence. And symbols are one of the best ways to express them, even today, nowadays we use in common parlance, when we say you look as beautiful as the moon. Now what are we stating? Is it truth or is it a lie or is it a half-truth? It's a symbol image. If you take it literally, you will get confused that moon is cold, moon is full of patches. But generally, moon is associated with the sense of beauty, the full moon, with the fullness of beauty. It's very attractive. It's charming. So it basically means you're very attractive and charming. That's it. So if you take it very literally, there is a problem. If you take it as mythology, there is a problem. So there is something which goes, mythology, I mean something untrue. So it's something in between. So it's a very beautiful way of expressing truths, which are beyond the ken of human experience sometimes, human understanding. So in this sense, we use the word mythology in no other sense, not the meaning that is given to it by the Western world, that it's all simply fabrications of the mind. And one of the purpose of these talks is to show how profoundly these sages, seers, they experienced the world and life and how they shared these things. And yes, as we have said, why they use symbolic language is because everybody was not ready to understand these profound truths. So last time, as we said, one of the things was that Vishnu Bhagwan asked some of these budding yogins who want to abandon the world, renounce the world and go away. He tells them, no, you get married. And then they go through the process of marriage, children. And then after some time, he tells them, look here. Good, you have understood the illusion part of it. Now here, illusion is not in the sense of something that doesn't exist. Illusion is only in the sense of it that there is a preparation through which we move towards reality. So illusion is a more of a diminished or distorted reality. That this reality, distorted reality, can be changed into an image of truth is a later subject that only Sri Aurobindo speaks about it. But that's for later. We are right now, what is meant by, like when a child asks, he's learning ABCD. You don't tell the child that A equals to MC square. It'll be absolutely confusing. So that's why one has to go step by step. Equally, when a child is in 11th standard, then you have to say that was only a preparation for this. You can't be, like children when they speak language, so they speak in a, what is called as Totli Bhasha. The languages may sound like gibberish, but their mothers understand what he is saying. And this is the steps that are taken. So we must understand that there was a reason why the rishis hid some profound truths from the unchaste mind, because one has to be prepared. So one of these stories is about, there are two kinds of srishti or creation which are described in Bhagavad Puran and all the occult Hindu scriptures. One of them is the creation which is without maithuna, amaithuni srishti, and the other is maithuni srishti, meaning thereby asexual and sexual. So even on earth we see this, amoeba, bacteria, virus is asexual. And then we see the sexual process. And in the future, again, it be asexual. But that's a different story. We'll right now not enter into too much into the future. But the difference is that, well, gods can also reproduce. They can put themselves into other beings. But they don't do it through a sexual process. There is a possibility that the consciousness can multiply itself. That's exactly what a guru does, actually. He multiplies itself, Shobindu describes this in the Life Divine, in other unnumbered bodies, literally. I mean, a true master, I'm not speaking a guru, what is again. So he is capable of multiplying himself in other beings. And as the mother says, and Shobindu confirms it, when she picks up someone, she puts a portion of herself. And that portion, she has described, it is like a special part of herself, special formation. So now, in a general way, she is present in the whole creation. But when she accepts and puts this special formation, then it becomes, we may say, a hotline. And slowly, the person starts getting molded into his own truth possibilities, because she is embodying the truth. So that's how the divine acts. All these are very difficult for the human mind to conceive. So for a long time, the creation is going on many planes, but it's going on without any sexual reproduction. So gods don't have to go through that process. So they you see, like Shiva and Parvati have a child, two children. How do they bring out? It's not a sexual process. We must understand, because the sexual process is not yet begun if we go into the process. Then there comes a time when Brahmaji calls his child. He has three children, but right now we'll talk about two mainly. And two of them who are part of this story is Daksha Prajapati, and the second is Narad. So he tells that now we must enter into sexual reproduction. It's called as Maithuni Srishti upon earth. So Daksha obeys the order. He says, all right, I'm fine with it. Narad doesn't quite like it. He is not happy about it. He says, okay, let my bro do whatever he wants to do. So Narad goes away. Now, why does he command such a thing? So if you see, with sexual reproduction, there is something which is very interesting which comes. One is, it means that the very material substance starts getting involved, because there is an exchange not just of consciousness, but of physical substance. We don't understand its great, the meaning behind it. So there is an exchange of physical substance. And along with that physical substance, there are new possibilities which come into being. So sexual reproduction creates new possibilities. But when you directly multiply, then it doesn't create new possibilities. So now he wants that there should be new possibilities. Literally, we can use the word adventure. Adventure of consciousness, which is, we don't know where it's going to stop. So Narad somehow understands this is dangerous, and he stays away. But Brahma wants it. There is a meaning behind it. It's not a purposeless thing. So Daksha says, all right, fine. So he marries. Now this is still marrying going on. And then he has to create a linga sharir, the body which can engage in sexual reproduction. And together they produce. Now you see, it's very clear symbol. 10,000 sons. So what is he speaking about? How can you possibly have? Daksha is not a human phenomena. He creates, releases 10,000 possibilities. We can take it like that. Which have to now assume, start this process of reproduction. So he has to populate the whole earth. There is nobody here. So he has to start the process. So these 10,000 sons have to prepare themselves. So they are engaged in some kind of tapasya. And Narad Muni is their chacha ji. So He comes there, uncle, and says, what are you people doing? He says, we are engaging in tapasya because we have been given the orders. And they have done great tapasya. You see, even today, if you actually, it's very interesting since we are talking about, they have to do sexual reproduction, but they are engaged in tapasya. If you read ancient Indian thought on having a progeny, and the mother also speaks about it. So one can have a progeny by an unconscious movement, simply as a, you know, all kinds of thoughts, impulse, desires. Or one can have a progeny very consciously. Mother speaks about this. She speaks about conscious birth, that you can do it. And even in ancient India, we used to have those not so ancient India. Okay, my own house, all the gods, photographs were there. And you grow up like that. You know, they become your icon, your idols. And mother and father are looking at them, but they can't avoid it. You know, they are all there, all on top. Krishna ji, Ram ji, Shiv ji, everybody is watching over you. Durga ji. So it was, the whole idea was, and mother speaks about it, that when you, when the mother specifically thinks about these images, these figures, these beautiful, she did not look at the gods, but lofty ideals, then the child becomes simply a physical being who is embodying these things. So the sexual reproduction was very interesting. Why? Because physical matter now will begin to be populated by higher thoughts, the realms from the higher worlds, higher consciousness, and therefore eventually matter is going to also evolve and become what it has to become. But that story is not told, at least here. So they are doing tapasya, quite a severe tapasya, to have physical reproduction. This is very different from the way West looks at having a baby, at least the modern time. So in India, in ancient India, it was meant like that. I know of people, couple, who would pray, meditate. Even there is a ritual described. Even if you read the Kama Sutra, there is a ritual described before even having physical intercourse. So everything was lifted to a great height. And so they would prepare themselves to have a baby. Having a baby was not an unconscious process. So now they are preparing themselves to have a baby. They will have as many babies. So they are all. So Narad is not much in favor of this, though his own father has commanded. So he goes and asks them the question. So his question is, do you know what is the origin of things and what is going to be the end of all this? So they don't know. Because the moment, here there is a hint, first hint. Sexual reproduction equal to now subjection to death. You are taking birth in matter. So he asks them, now there will be birth and with birth will come death. It's not like multiplying from inside as many and then you withdraw those forms. It's not going to be like that. You have birth in matter. Matter is still subject to the inconscient forces. There will be death. So he asks them, do you know? Basically, he wants to tell them, look, bro, you must know what you are in for. It's okay. You want to do it, make your choice. But you must understand that this would immediately mean the entry of death on the planet. He doesn't say in so many words. That's why he said it's an occult scripture. So they think about it and they say, yeah, basically what you say is right. Whatever will be born will have death. And so it'll... I don't want to enter into this process. So all of them are initiated into renunciation. So Narad initiates into renunciation. So they all walk away. So Dakshaprajapati is very unhappy. He goes back to Brahma. He says, what shall I do? He is my own brother. And this is what he has done. He has spoiled my plan. What do I do? So he says, don't worry. He is like that. He has got his own ideas. And don't worry. You let him follow his path. You again, you start. So again, he and his wife bring about now 1,000 sons, now not 10,000. And their names are also very interesting. So one is Hayarashva, Haryashva. And the second is Sabalashva. Ashva is always force. So now these are strong fellows who will not listen to him so easily. So they engage in still deeper tapasya, now 1,000 sons. Again Narad comes, ask the same question. He says, now he asks it very differently, very bit cunningly. He says, look here, you are doing something because your father has said this. He says, yes. He says, but your brothers, elder brothers have followed a different ideal. So don't you think that you must listen to your elder brother and follow his steps? They say, yes. whatever they may have done, they must be having their logic. So he doesn't give them the logic. He says, look here, your elder brothers have walked that way, the path of renunciation. You really want to enter into grahasthi? So they said, no, I think my elder brothers will follow them. So these 1,000 sons also got. Now Daksh gets very annoyed. So there are two events that take place. First is, he says, he marries, he now brings out, brings daughters. So now he and his wife bring daughters. So you have the Daksh Kanyas, quite a number. Now Narad, when he sees, he has now played a game. He has brought daughters. So Narad says, it's okay, I will not interfere. That's how the story goes, that he lets the daughters be. And these daughters then get married to rishis, again, all other realms, rishis, Marich and all, they probably form a human body. I don't know, this is not described there. But together then they start the process of Maithuni Srishti, quite a laborious task. So it's through the feminine energies. But Narad has asked a very interesting question to these fellows. He says, do you know, I'll tell you a story. Do you know that place where there is one man and he governs everything? Do you know that place where there is a woman who is absolutely loose? She is always changing dresses, wearing one dress after another. And there is a man who is totally after her. Then he asks, do you know a place where everything is changing so fast and all the time you will see sharp objects coming up? There will be a little respite and a sharp object. Little respite and a sharp object. Like, you know, rotating dagger or something, or daggers and all these instruments. He says, do you know that place? Then he says, and do you know that there is someone there who governs all this? But he does not belong to that place. So they listen to all this and they say, we don't know. So Narad says, that's what you are going to do, because you don't know. And do you know that place where if you slip into a hole, you cannot come back? And then he says, do you know that person who is actually the owner? And if you go there, you don't come back. So they contemplate, they say, okay, fine, we have understood. Bro, we are going back. So they turn away. Now Maithuni Srishti basically describes it. So there is a, that's why, you know, sexual process behind it, lot of truths come into play. So one is that there is the possibility of a downfall. The downfall can be so dangerous. So he says it can, this is well known in all yogas, and Sri Aurobindo also speaks about it, the three doors. And even the Bhagavad describes, he describes it in The Mother, one of the books, where one of them is three doors to hell, three things that lead to downfall, which he wants to conquer back. So one of them is money, the other is material fame, ambition, and the third is sexual process. Now people say, what is all this hell? We don't believe. It's not about hell. Your intelligence becomes so clouded. At least I have seen this so often. If you have loads of money, it becomes very difficult to understand subtle truths. Somehow it just engages your mind. And so hell is what? Hell is maybe a kingdom, but without the divine is hell. So that's how Ravan has got a kingdom of all the three. It's hell. Kansa is full of suspicion, fear. So it is a hell. Mother gave that message long back. Men, countries, continent, the choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. This is in 71. Now we see it coming true. So she was asked what is meant by the abyss. She says, abyss is a world, inner state, where you live in fear and suspicion, distrust. So therefore you are fighting and quarreling with everyone. So she says, and what is it that opens the door? So she says the same thing. She says, fear opens the door, the need for power opens the door, lust for power, greed opens the door. So she uses these three because they will open the door to the abyss. So he says, where you are going, there is a possibility of a hole. You may not sink, but don't know. I mean, if you sink, you can't come back. That's how it is described. Shobindo is unique. He says you can still come back. Sri Krishna also says you can come back. But Sri Krishna gives the condition that you have to take the divine name. Then you can come back from any hole. But he says, look here, that's the terrain you are going to go. Because if you fall, and it is well known that power, money and sexual process. So you come back. So that's why you see that there was this, the four ashramas of life. But that's a different subject. We'll not go into it right now. So all both of them understand what he's saying. So the place is material earth, the material body. And he says there are 25 guardians or 25 powers that govern it, which is the human body. And we know the Sankhya description with 25 elements which have gone into constituting this human city. And the hole is through that you can enter into the abyss. That's why sometimes, and human body is made so symbolically actually. It's very amazing that this whole sexual process, if you really look at it, it's literally like a bottomless pit. That's how it is described. And then he says, and if you go to, and that's why the whole process of brahmacharya and awakening the kundalini, taking it to the center and above, that's the process of converting this base energy into Ritas, Tejas, Ojas, so on and so forth, and Virias finally. So, he's describing the human being which is going to come. So he says, do you know about what's going to come? So he says, there will be a pit. And if you fall in that pit, you're gone. Of course, there will be time which is always changing. And the woman is Prakriti. She doesn't stay with one person. You know, it's described by some other in Purush Puratan ki vadhu kyo na chanchala hoye. You know, some people have described Lakshmi ji. But basically it means nothing stays there forever. Do you know where you are going to go? You think I am forever with this person? No, she will change. Because nature, sattva, rajo, tamo, guni is constantly changing. Do you want to really go there? There is nothing which you can hold on as stable. Things will be changing. And then time. For a moment you will feel you are comfortable and it will tear through you. So it's moving at a very fast speed. And you will find it difficult to escape its clutches. So these people basically, they say, decide, no, we don't want to go. He gives them a riddle and they understand the riddle. It's described, the meaning of the riddle is described later on in the story canto itself. So now, as we said, Daksh Prajapati has a problem. So he goes to Brahma and Brahmaji tells him that have the daughters, this is the process. So he goes and he has daughters who get married, but he curses to Narad Muni. He says, you have spoiled these plans which have been, my father had given it. He's your father also, but you have not listened to him. So you will never be able to stay at one place. So Narad Muni says, all right, though with my tapasya I can remove this curse, but I will not, I accept this. Now you see, if you look at the story very mysteriously, what kind of a curse is this that you won't stay at one place? So essentially it means that you will never have, you know, that nature, you will. It's not really a curse. So Narad Muni is known that he can move around freely in the world. That's why, because of this curse which is given to him. He can go wherever he likes. In fact, he has to go wherever he feels the inner urge. He will not stay at one place. And that's following that footsteps, many sannyasi actually practice it. So a true sannyasi doesn't have one place. But it's very interesting that with regard to Raman Maharishi, he would also not take one place. And then the Divine Mother comes to him. So he says, why are you moving here and there? Why don't you stay at one place? So then he stays at one place, and that's where, on Arunachal Hill. So there are two ways approaching the divine, the highest truth. One is that you don't enter into this. You are like a wandering sadhu. You go everywhere and you teach everybody whatever only about God, and you are cut off from the world. But in the wisdom of the Almighty, Lord Vishnu himself and Narayan and Brahma, they have settled for the Maithuni Srishti. Now Maithuni Srishti is because it's the only creation which has evolutionary possibility. any other creation, gods can produce number of beings out of themselves, but they will not evolve. It remains wherever it is. But with evolutionary srishti, there comes the danger. That's why Mother uses the word adventure. There comes the danger of precipitous falls, of pralaya. But there is also the possibility of raising yourself and joining with the highest. So Narad has one more question which I forgot to mention. He says, in that place, there is a river which runs in two opposite directions. So two opposite directions is if you enter there, you can either, it's a double maya, vidya, vidya. Either you can enter into that pit completely carried away, or you can rise to the highest. Now there he gives the clue that in that place, either you will enter into the lowest or you will rise to the highest. So he says it like there is a river which turns in two opposite directions. So this world is like that. He has described the Maithuni Srishti. But in the secret wisdom and providence of things, because we often say, why created this material world? He should have been happy with that godlike world, no? Because gods don't have issues. They are having nice somras and enjoying life, but they don't evolve. This is the whole secret. But the divine wants that there should be many who are like him. Gods cannot become like him. In all these scriptures you will see, gods when they are in distress, they go to their next level. But man is capable. Man, because now creation has reached this point, that he can join with the Supreme, become one with the Supreme. And for this, the whole adventure is worthwhile. That's how Shubhendu describes in Krishna poem. At last I know the meaning of soul's birth into this universe, terrible and sweet. I who have felt the hungry pangs of earth, hungry heart of earth, aspiring beyond heaven to Krishna's feet. Beyond even the gods to Krishna's feet. And then at the end he closes by saying that for this one moment lived the ages past, the world now throbs fulfilled in me at last. So you have these two possibilities. Several places is described in the Purana, but right now we'll stick to this story, that one is the entering into what is known as grahastha life. So this division continues till today. You will see that people speak about the grahastha and the sannyas. So which is higher, which is better? The command of God is to go through the grahastha, if you really look at it. And I quote examples. So I say, two of the greatest ones, Sri Ramakrishna, who is guru of Swami Vivekananda, he is still entered into grahastha, and Sri Aurobindo and the mother entered into grahastha. They didn't go through the sexual reproduction. Mother has gone through even that. Because see the interesting part, the feminine. But Sri Aurobindo has not gone. In fact, he says that in a very casual conversation with a friend. Because he said, is it possible to remain a brahmachari as a married person? He says, yes, why not? He says, what do you mean it's possible? He says, yes. He says, are you a brahmachari? Like tauntingly, he says, yes, I am a brahmachari. And that's why you see the way, you know, that's why Mrilalini Devi and she had to, that's a different subject altogether. So there, what is the relation, union, what is that kind of union? There is a union where the two people can remain a brahmachari and support each other's energy. That is one kind of grahastha life. The other is you can have a child, but the progeny is not created for, what is that song? Mera naam karega roshan jagme mera raj dulara. He will bring name and fame to me. No. If you go into that process, it's going down. But you bring out a child who will also, either for the service of the divine or for work for the divine, these things are known. They are few, but they are definitely known. One of the classic examples is Shivaji. His mother, Jijabai, if you read her life, she was constantly thinking, because her husband was one of the mantris in one of the chieftains in I think Shersha is Bengal side, but there was another Muslim ruler, and she would feel very bad, And she wanted a child who could free the country, or country that time meant the Maratha Rajya, from the Muslims. So she would think about it, aspire about it. And eventually she did give birth to a Shivaji. And Shivaji and Guru Gobind Singh together, they share the joy of throwing away the Mughal Empire. So she did conceive of a child. Shurubindo's father, he wanted a child, you know, that he should be the bestest best in the world. Mother speaks about her parents. They wanted, my child should be the best, the most noble, the highest conception, but they didn't believe in divine. But they asked for it. So basically, why? Because then the child helps in the evolutionary process of the earth. There is a work here which is going on. And that not all. That's why Narad could not understand, as there is an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo, that Narad is a demigod. When he saw the actions of Janak, he felt he is a... about Narad we know that he was sent to King Janak's Sabha. So Janak is a lineage. So one of the Janaks. Because he wants the highest knowledge, which you cannot have unless you have gone through earthly life. That's why if you read the Upanishads, the highest of the highest is not given to sannyasis, it's given to kshatriyas who have lived in life. You can't as a Brahmin get that highest knowledge. You have turned away from life. So Narad is also told, if you want the highest of the highest truth, you have to go and meet King Janak. So King Janak, as we know, he has wives, he has children. All of them are great children. I mean, so he goes there and sees King Janak is sitting and he is enjoying music. Somebody is applying chandan to him and all this is going on. He says, what? I have to learn from this guy. He thinks poorly of him. And so he is thinking that anyways, but he has been sent there. He says, okay, now that I have come, it's fine. So King Janak welcomes him, says, today you rest. Tomorrow we'll meet. So he goes to rest. He's nice, you know, he's a king. So palace with nice 9-star accommodation. Okay, 9-star, nine clouds. He says, what kind of a thing? I have to learn from him. Sure. So anyways, he passes the night very restless. I know some people who like that, when they went to a 5-star hotel, they couldn't sleep. So they slept on the floor. So sometimes they ask me, I said, I get comfortable sleep. Put me anywhere. Equally on the floor, equally on the... I have no issues, I don't think of. But it's a challenge if you are not used to. So poor Narad. So next day he comes, he's in a hurry. He says, what is the hurry? You go and see this lovely Janakpuri. He says, see, I have come here for something else. He says, okay, we'll talk about it. You go there and all my people will accompany you. They'll take you to different places. He says, okay, but what am I supposed to see? He says, you go and see, but only one condition. You carry this little pot on your head. He says, pot on my head, okay, fine. I have to do some balancing act. He says, no, just listen carefully. You're always in a hurry. So the water will be filled to the brim. He says, okay. So some kind of a test. He says, no, not just an ordinary test. Listen carefully. One drop falls on the ground. My fellows who are attending on you will cut you to pieces. You are a dead man. He says, really? But I have to go. He says, if you want the highest of knowledge, this is the only test I am keeping for you. He says, okay. He goes around, comes back. So, yeah, so how was the city? He said, what city? My concentration was here. One drop and you are saying you are going to your scenic, yeah, all around. So I had to be very careful. I saw things, but I could never really get into it. He said, that's the secret. This is the knowledge you have to learn. Be in them, be in the world, but not of the world. So this secret, why it is given and not the other thing? Because there is a completeness here, matter, which has also come out of the divine. This is not revealed in this canto, so we'll talk about it when it comes. So Narad turns away, but he is given this task that don't be at one place. In literally, if you take the sannyasi, now people use this word sannyasi based on your outer robe. But truly a sannyasi has no one place to live. And if you really see one of the that kind of sannyasi, you'll see Swami Vivekananda. And he would go all around. He went. It was his destiny which carried him. So sometime people would welcome him. And he would stay for 2 months, 3 months. Then he would come back and come here. Then finally he stayed for 2 years. Another example, I know this kind whom I know personally, is Chotanarayanji. So Chotanarayanji, though he was here, ashramite, but his destiny carried him to all the places. In Nainital he'll go, 2-3 months he'll be there, another place he'll go. Like that he would move around, then he'll come back here, 3 months he'll be here working in the dining room. So these are the two destinies. One is where you are not at one place and you move around. As a sannyasi, you own nothing and nothing owns you. There is no, like sannyasi doesn't own a house. So, but the other is, which is more complete actually, is householder. But more difficult, that's why it is something which people avoid. In one of letters of Sri Aurobindo in 1913 or 12, somebody asks him, he says, you know, John Baptista of Congress, that time there was only one party. So he asks him, why don't you come back and lead the country? He says, see, I am fully living here and I am leading the life of a householder. He's not living with his wife, he's not living with anyone. Householder, that's how it is. Grahastha. The moment you stay at one place, you are a grahastha. Graha means you are holding something. And it is more complete because you are taking more challenges and eventually you are also opening an evolutionary process. The other kind is non-evolutionary. That's why the sannyasis typically want to ultimately get away from the world. But if you want to do the fullness and fulfillment of earthly life, then you have to go through this process. So that's why you have the role of Narayan. But it's, you have to be careful because there is a woman who will deceive you. That is Prakriti. Huh? No actual woman. So Prakriti will always fool you. You have to be careful which side you are stepping into. The river can take you downward or the river can make you upward, unite you with the Supreme. Time is constantly changing its landscape. Today you are feeling, I am so happy. Tomorrow a dagger may stab you. So you should know where you are. Yes, this is more higher and more complete destiny, but these are the challenges. So from here starts a new process of creation, which is called Maithuni Srishti, or the sexual process, which is essentially an evolutionary process. And that's why evolution is unique to Earth. It's not found anywhere else. The gods don't evolve. They are fixed to their type. The Rakshasas, Asuras don't evolve. They are fixed to their type in their own worlds. When they need, they have to fight. There is no evolution. That's why the Asuras can never conquer. Even if they conquer the Swarg, it's only momentarily, because you have to evolve to become an Adhikari. There is no such thing. If you have to evolve, you have to enter into Maithuni Srishti. That's how Bhishma from the Vasus evolves to a higher status by the curse entering, being born from the womb of a, some sannyasis will say very wrong word, Papa Yoni. It's not that. To understand the full implication of it. So to each his own freedom, his own journey. One is a non-evolutionary path where you go away from the world. The other is the path of evolution where you enter into the world. That's what Maithuni Srishti is about. You are born from. It will eventually is going toward that higher kind once matter is transformed. So, because that's the reason why Maithuni Srishti has been allowed, so that evolutionary process can take us right to the divine. If you don't have this background, it'll look very strange. Why is Brahma giving such an order when he knows it's such a dangerous thing? Why is Lord Narayan encouraging him? And why he is going through that whole process? So that's the whole purpose. If you want to go to the highest, this is the path. That's why you see nowhere, all yoga is only for human beings. Why? Why is yoga done only in a material body? Gods don't engage in yoga, by the way. So on one side you say you have to leave, on the other side you say only in a human body you can do it. It's a paradox. Ask any yogi, he will invariably. Things like moksha, uniting with the divine, is not given to gods. Gods are content with their splendor. Okay, Jai Ma.